Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Yevamos Daf Ayin Tes. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's shiur 15 lines from the top of Daf Ayin Tes. In our last shiur, we introduced the Nesinim, those people upon whom there was a gzeira, a ruling, that they shall not be accepted in terms of marriage into the rank and file Jewish people. People of pure Jewish descent cannot marry the Nesinim. This type of prohibition, though on a different level, you find by a mamzer. We mentioned at the end of our previous year why David had made a gzeira against them. He felt that their character was something that could not possibly cling unto the Jewish people. These were people that had a strain of cruelty to them, and we saw that in their demand for vengeance through the taking of the lives of 7 of King Saul's descendants. And we are picking up with that point that, in fact, David HaMelech, his hands are tied, so to speak. He attempted to appease them after having discovered that their gripe was, in fact, the reason for a 3-year famine. And after attempting to appease them, after they pointed out that they wanted this vengeance, after attempting to do so, he failed, and they remained intransigent in their demand. So we have a reference to 7 descendants of Shaul HaMelech that they wanted to see killed. We pick up our Gemara with a pasuk. Vayikach HaMelech es shnei b'nei ritzpo bas ayo asher yoldo l'shol es armoni ves mifiboshes ves chameshes b'nei michal bas shol asher yoldo l'adriel ben barzilai hamecholosi. So in this pasuk we see that David HaMelech, he takes 2 of the sons of Ritzpa that gave birth to whom she gave birth through her husband Shaul, and 5 children of Michal Bas Shaul. So these would be 5 grandchildren of Shaul. The Gemara asks, "My Shno Hani, what's unique about these? After all, they were other descendants of Shaul, so how is it that these were chosen?" Omar Rav Huna, chosen, of course, to be executed to appease the vengeance of the Givonim, the Nesinim. The Givonim and Nesinim are one and the same for our discussion. Omar Rav Huna. Rav Huna tells us, Hevirum lifnei aroin. There was a parade, if you will, of the descendants of Shaul that marched in front of the Aron, the Holy Ark. Kol she'aron koltoi lemisa. Anyone that miraculously was we'll say in our context means it was stopped by the Aron. In other words, there was some type of miracle that took place when they passed in front of the Aron. These individuals couldn't keep walking. They were trapped or caught by the Aron. So that's a sign that they are to be executed. Kol she'ein Aron kolto, any of those that were able to walk by the Aron without being restrained, l'chaim, they would live. Mosiv Rav Chona bar Ketina. The pasuk says, Vayachmoil HaMelech al Mephibosheth ben Yehoshafat ben Shaul. The name Mephibosheth is dashed underlined, and you can see a few lines above, we also had dashed underlined his name. And this pasuk says that David had compassion on Mephibosheth, the son of Jehoiachin, who was in fact the son of Shaul, so that Mephibosheth would be a grandson of Shaul. Rashi explains, Vayachmoil HaMelech, we're looking at Rashi together at the upper part of the narrow lines. V'i ba'oron talio milsa, if it was dependent on the oron, kevon delo kalto oron, since the oron didn't restrain him, mahu chemlosa shel David, what's the significance of David HaMelech's compassion? And the Gemara answers, Umishani shelo heviro, as we see now in the Gemara text, shelo heviro, what was the compassion of David? Well, it means that he didn't put him in the position to be restrained by the Oron in the first place. He didn't have him, Shelo Heviro, didn't have him pass by the Oron from the outset. Question, V'chi Masu Ponim Yesh Badavar, is David to show favoritism to show partiality in matters of capital cases? We're dealing here with a situation where people are going to be executed. How can you choose one over the other? Ella, rather, the Gemara continues, Sheheviroi v'koltoi. The Mephibosheth was passed by the Oron, and in fact he was restrained. So that's a simon, that's a sign that he is to die. Uvikeshel of rachamim u'poltoi. And David prayed, and as a result of the prayer, he was released. Question, Vakati Masu Ponim Yesh Badavar? But still, since the Oron had restrained him and disabled him from continuing to walk past it, so it's not right that someone else should be killed in his place. The Gemara continues, Elo shebikesh rachamim shelo yiklutenu ha'oroin. David's expression of compassion was through prayer that he should not be restrained by the Oron, so that we wouldn't get the impression that he was restrained and then released and someone else put in his place, but rather through the prayer of David he was able to walk by freely. Question, V'hok Siv, is there not a pasuk that says, Lo yumsu avois al bonim? There's a note on the side that says that the Ikur Kavona, in quoting this pasuk, is from the end of the pasuk, where it goes on to say, Ish b'chetoi yumsu, a person shall die only because of his own sins. And as you will recall in our previous shiur, the whole matter involving the Givonim was that Shaul had seen to the execution of Noiv Irakehanim. They provided sustenance, or say livelihood, for these Givonim people, and with the death, with the killing of the Kehanim of Noiv, so they lost their livelihood. And that was recounted by the Pasuk as if Shaul had killed them, the Givonim themselves. And the sin, so to speak, of the setback of the Givonim, that was a result of Shaul's decisions, Shaul's behavior. Why should his descendants pay a price for their predecessors' wrongdoing? Omar Rabbi Chiya bar Abba Omar Rabbi Yochanan. So here we have a very dramatic response to that very significant question. The response is, Mutov Sheteoker Oisachas Min HaTorah, better that one letter should be uprooted from the Torah. In other words, the Pasuk did present a principle to us. However, we have a counter consideration, and that is that if nothing is done and the Givonim gripe remains untended to, that would result in what we call a chilul shem shamayim. So we're saying it's better for, in this case, say, a one-time contingency ruling to abrogate the teaching of the Pasuk that people should do not pay for predecessor sins, and here they will. V'al yischal shem shamayim b'farhesya. As long as we're able to prevent the name of the Almighty from being desecrated in public. What's the desecration issue? So let's take a look at Rashi. V'al yischal shem shamayim. Shiu ha'umois oimrim. If nothing is done for the vengeance on behalf of the Givinim, nations of the world will say, Ein umazu ru'uyin lidabek ba. The Jewish people are not fit to cleaving unto, to sticking with, to joining up with. Shari poshtu yadayim begirim, litol mezonisayim. Look at these Jews. They afflicted these converts, the Givoinim, Nesinim converts, and they robbed them of their livelihood. V'lo osu b'nekama, and no vengeance was taken on their behalf. So what we're concerned with here is what the impression that will be created by lack of action on the part of the Jews will give rise to sinister remarks concerning the Jewish people, resulting in others not wanting to join up with the Jewish people. So in order to rectify that or prevent that from having arising, we're going to, as we say, abrogate a teaching of the Torah. In order to preserve, we'll say, this greater consideration. We continue in the Gemara. Vatikach ritzpo basayo es asak. This is, of course, the pasuk, the woman with whom we opened the pasuk, the mother of two of the victims. So she took sackcloth. Vatateu lo el hatsur mitchilas kotsir ad nosach mayim aleihem min hashamayim. What she did is she took some sackcloth and she covered the bodies of her, of the executed ones, from the harvest season until the rainy season. This period of time covers all of the summer months. V'lonosna oif hashamayim lanuach aleihem yoimam v'chayas esod alaylon. She was very diligent in protecting the bodies, not allowing birds during the day nor animals at night of wreaking havoc on the bodies. So what do we see? We have a situation where first of all, you see they were not given to burial for a few months, and you also see her diligence in protecting the bodies. The Gemara asks on the second wide line, "V'hoksiv lo solu nivloso aloetz." The Torah specifically warns that a person who's executed, the body is not to remain overnight on the pole on which bodies were suspended after being executed, after being stoned. We see then that execution victims or perpetrators that were executed, even though they were their offenders, we have an obligation to bury their bodies before nightfall. All the more so over here, how could their bodies have been left strung up in public view for months? Omar Rabbi Yochanan, Mishum Rabbi Shimon ben Yitzchak. And again, we have very similar consideration to what we had before. Mutav Shetayokio Isachas Minatero. Better that one letter, or here in this case, a rule, should be uprooted from the Torah. Again, a momentary, one-time ruling. V'yiskade shem shemayim farasya. And through leaving the bodies exposed for this elongated period of time, we will achieve sanctification of God's name. What do we mean by the sanctification of His name? Shoyoivrim v'shovim amrim. Passers-by, when seeing bodies suspended in full view, people will say, over v'shavim are passers-by. Ma tivon shalelu. They'll say, who are these people? What's the nature of these people? And they'll be told, halalu b'nei melochim heim. These are descendants of kings. These are princes Uma osu, what did they do to be strung up like that? Answer, poshtu yadeim begeim gruim. They, or their predecessor, had afflicted questionable converts. Gruim are people that drag along. But they're the Nesinim, we mentioned, we touched on their history in our previous shiurim, that they were actually a lowly people. They came in, through trickery, claiming they were someone else other than who they really were. They were really members of the seven nations that the Jewish people were expected to annihilate anyway. So they had misrepresented themselves and joined the Jewish people through questionable means, we'll say. Hence, they're called Gerim Grurim. So passersby will say the people strung up are princes that had been afflicted by their predecessors and lost their livelihood. Omru, people will then say, Ein l'cha uma shiruya lidabek bo, because there is no nation like this nation, like the Jewish people. Uma b'nei melachim kach, mind you, look at the fate of even princes. B'nei had yoytus alachas kama v'kama, commoners all the more so. If princes can pay, will end up paying the price, as the common saying goes, no one is above the law. So even if the highest class pay the price, you can imagine how prominent the law will be when it comes to commoners. Uma geirim gurim kach, and mind you, at the other extreme, how even these lowly individuals benefited from, we'll call the legal defense or the legal system, from the concern of the Jewish leadership. Yisrael achas kama v'kama, someone who becomes Jewish, a regular Jew, a legitimate convert, all the more so will be cared for by the rule of law, by the public concern, by the interest in being Mekadesh Shem Shemayim. So that passersby will come and say, wow, this Jewish people are an amazing people, how concerned they are for the oppressed, how concerned they are for Kiddush Hashem. what a good deal, so to speak, in joining up with the Jewish people. Miyad, and at that point, Nisvasfa Yisrael Me'av Chamishim Elef, 150,000 people joined up, converted to Judaism. Shenemar Ba'il Shlomo Shivim Elef Noisei Sabol V'Shivim Elef Chosev Bahar. And it says that at that point in time, King Solomon, Shlomo HaMelech, had 70,000 load bearers and 80,000 stone ewers. The Gemara asks, the Dilmum Yisrael Havu, maybe the Pasuk is describing Jews, original Jews, not converts, people joining up. Lo sakadaitich, no, you can't suggest that. Dechtivu me Yisrael, lo nosan shlomo eved. As far as the Jewish people are concerned, they did not serve in any servile capacity. Vidilma dugzar v'yama, maybe the reference to these 150,000 people, they're hired hands. They're not people that are joining as slaves to the Jewish people. So how do you see that people joined the ranks of the Jews as a result of the execution of the descendants of Shaul? Elo mehocha, vayispor Shlomo. By the way, Shlomo was the son of King David. David is the one who saw to it that the Givonim would receive their desired revenge. So we have another pasuk. Vayispor Shlomo kol ha'anoshim agirim asher be'eretz Yisrael, vayimatzu me'o v'chamishim elef, vayas mehem shivim elef, sabol u'shmonim elef chotzev bahar. So we see in this pasuk that the people that had joined up were gerim. They were people that converted to the Jewish people, not hired hands, not original Jews. The Gemara now asks, and we have a little structural note on the side, because we're going to be introduced to a new marking, a diamond. And on the side, we have indicated these are Gimel, three people, Shegozru al Hanasinim, that had made rulings concerning the restriction of marrying Nasinim. So the Gemara asks, Unasinim David Gozar Aleim, is that true that David is the one that made the Gzeirah concerning the Nasinim? That's what we've been claiming till now, at least. Is that true, though? Moshe Gozar Aleim, we find that Moshe Rabbeinu made a Gzeirah against the Nasinim. Dechtiv, Mechotev Eitzecha Ad She'ev Meimecha. That they are to be placed as slaves. Chotev Eitzecha are woodsmen, and She'ev Mecha, water bearers. So why is it that their distancing is associated with David, when we see that Moshe Rabbeinu did not accept them as converts, but rather declared that they shall remain as slaves? The Gemara answers, Moshe Gozar Lahu Dora. Moshe made a gzera concerning the Nesinim of his generation. David Gozar Lukulei Dora. David imposed a gzera for future generations as well. Question, Vakati Yoshua Gozar Alayo. But still, we have another personage that made a gzera before David HaMelech, namely Yoshua. Dichtiv, Vayitnem Yoshua Bayomahu, Choyfei Eitzim, Veshoavei Mayim, Lo Eida, Ulemizbach Hashem. So we see that Yoshua had declared that they shall be woodsmen and water bearers. Yoshua Gozar Bizman Shebeitish Beisham Mekdish Kayim. Yeshua did make a ruling concerning the Givonim or the Nesinim as long as the Beis HaMikdash was extant. David Gozar Bizman She'ein Beis HaMikdash Kayim. David extended the Gzerah to a time beyond the Beis HaMikdash. You can see in the Pasuk where Yeshua was Beis HaMikdash oriented, because at the end of the Pasuk we had cited just the line above this. It said at the end of the Pasuk, Ulemizbach Hashem. They were relegated to being crafts, woodsmen and water drawers for the benefit of the Beis HaMikdash. But David came and extended the Gzerah beyond. The Gemara continues at the top of Omid Beis, Bimei Rebbe, Bikshu Lahatir Nesinim. In the time of Rebbe, there was thought to declare the Nesinim mutter, in other words, to remove their slave status. Omar Lohem Rebbe. So as we said, this was in the days of Rebbe. It wasn't Rebbe himself. Rebbe reacted and said, Chalkenu Natir, the holding that we have in them as slaves, that aspect of their slavery that serves us, that we can undo. Chelik Mizbeach Miyatir. However, the portion held in them, in other words, their indebtedness of slavery to the Beis HaMikdash, who can undo that? In other words, something that you own, you can declare unowned. But something that you don't own, something you don't have a holding in, for example, in these Givonim, Nesinim, part of their obligatory service was to the Beis HaMikdash. Who can relinquish that? Upligo de Rabbi Chiya bar Abba. The statement we just saw made by Rebbe that said the chelik of the mizbeach, who can matya that? That is at odds with Rabbi Chiya's teaching. The Omar Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, Omar Rabbi Yochanan, chelik Aida li'olam asur. The chelik of the people, the Aida is the community, that remains asur. You can't release that. It can't be freed up unless they formally release it. Until they're matir, until they're mafkir, they're holding. Chelik mizbeach, the aspect of the givonim that was indebted to the mizbeach as well, that bizman shebeis hamikdash kaim asur. When the Beis HaMikdash is around, so that cannot be relinquished. That they have a debt of servitude to the Beis HaMikdash. However, ein Beis HaMikdash kayam, sorry. And this is dashed underlined because this is the main point. When the Beis HaMikdash is not around, so that servitude is automatically released. So just to go over this machlokes, according to Rebbe, the servitude toward the Beis HaMikdash is forever binding. Even if there's no Beis HaMikdash, that obligation of slavery remains. So they can never be freed up. They can, but according to Rebbe Bar Abba, when the Beis HaMikdash is not around anymore, so they have no servitude to that, and they could, it seems from the context of this Gemara, that they could actually be freed up, and a slave that's freed essentially becomes a full-fledged Jew, becomes a Ben Churin, as the Halacha refers to him. The Mishnah. Before we begin the Mishnah, we should note on the side the Nosei Mivneh heading, the topic heading with structural note. You'll see that in the diamonds there appears the names of Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Lezer. Their Chokim, they argue Al Ezes Soris Chama O Odom Choletz. A Soris is a man that is basically incapable of procreation. He doesn't develop and mature in a normal, proper, healthy fashion. He's a soros, and there's a reference in Rashi that indicates that the soros is in the, it falls under the category of a krus shofcha. Krus shofcha, we discussed in previous, in recent dapim, is someone that's incapable of procreation and is not allowed to marry into the Jewish people. When we discuss this phenomenon of soros, there are two kinds of soros that will be referenced. One is called a sris chama, literally a sris of the sun, S-U-N, but it's really a reference to a person who was born like that, not as a result of some kind of ailment. Then there is, that's what we call then a sris chama, he's born like that. There's another term, sris odom, that we'll see. Rashi says that means he became a soros, he became this way after he was born. In other words, he was born normal and then something happened. The Mishnah. Omar Rabbi Yoshua, Shomati shehasoros choletz v'choltzin li'ishto. I heard that the soros is someone that if he is a surviving brother in the case of the passing, the death of a brother leaving no children, so he is the yavam. If he is the only brother, so he will do chalitza. And if he dies, obviously leaving no children, he's a soros, so choltzin li'ishto, his wife will participate in chalitza. On the other hand, v'hasoros lo choletz v'lo choltzin li'ishto. And I also heard that, the opposite, that a soros does not do chalitza, and his wife, the widow, does not participate in chalitza. We should take a look at Rashi. V'hasoros lo choletz, dichtiv, the posik says, lo yimoches shemoi miyisrael. This is a reference to a person who dies leaving no children, and the Torah expects a surviving brother to do yibum, to marry the widow, in order so that the name of the deceased is preserved, is not erased. So now, this pasuk of Lo Yimoches Shmo Yisrael, Prat Nesoros, this excludes the source, Sheshmo Mochi, is incapable of procreation. As we said just before, that he is a type of Krus Shavcha, a type of Ptsuadaka, that someone who is incapable of procreation. So Rabbi Yeshua hears two things, two contradictory points, and he the Ein Li Lefari, she says in the Mishnah, and I don't know how to explain this. Omar Rabbi Akiva Ani Afarish, and we have the diamond as we saw before in our introduction. We mentioned these are Rabbi Kiva versus Rabbi Elazar, two opinions as to which soros is being referred to in Rabbi Yeshua's remark. So he says, I'll explain. Soris Adam choletz v'choltzin lishto. You see, the double underline is used to highlight each one of these. So they, according to Rabbi Akiva, the Soris Odom, this is a person who became a Soris after he was born. So he does Chalitza and Choltzim Lishto if he dies leaving no children. So his wife will be eligible to participate in Chalitza. Mipnei Shehoisa Lo Shasa Kosher, because he had been healthy. Kosher means able, ability. He was qualified in procreation. There was a time that he could have procreated, but something happened to him that now made him a Soris. So the fact that he once was capable of procreation, he is subject to the laws of Chalitza. Soris Chamo, this is someone who was born that way. Loi Chaylets Velo Choltzim Lishto. He doesn't do Chalitza, nor will his wife participate in Chalitza, Mipnei Shelo Haisa Loi Shasa Kosher, because he was never qualified. Rabbi Lezer Omer Loki. Rabbi Lezer says the opposite. He says, not so. Elo Sris Chamo Chaylets Vecholtzim Lishto. A Sris Chamo is subject to the laws of Chalitza, Mipnei Sheyesh Loi Refuah. Because a Sris Chamo is someone that can be healed. Sris Adam Loi Chaylets Vecholtzim Lishto, Mipnei Sheyesh Loi Refuah. And this is, of course, in contrast to the Sris Adam that has no solution, no healing. Hayid Rabbi Yeshua ben Beseira al ben Megusis. Shehoya b'Yerushalayim. There was a person referred to as ben Megusis that was Yerushalayim. Sris Adam. He was that kind of person, a Sris Adam. V'yibmu es ishto. He died, leaving no children, and his wife was married by a surviving brother, Lekayim Divrei Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva is the one that said that Sris Adam is subject to the laws of Chalitza, the laws of Yibum. So that you see Rabbi Yeshua ben Becerra's testimony supports the opinion, the position of Rabbi Akiva. Hasoris lo choleitz velo miyabeim. The Soros is not to participate in Chalitza nor Yibum. V'chein Eilinis, Lecheletzes, V'lo Misyabemis. An Eilinis, we can say, is the female counterpart of the Soros. She is a woman that did not develop normally, and she is hence incapable of procreation. So she does not do Chalitza nor Yibum. Hasoros Shecholatz Liavimto, Lo Posla. A Soris that does Chalitza to a widow of a brother of his that died, leaving no children, so Lo Posla doesn't render her, or doesn't disqualify her as a widow from eventually marrying a Kohen. A real Chalitza is disqualified from the Kuna. But since the Soris is excluded from the realm of Yibum, his Chalitza is meaningless. So he does not his Chalitza does not disqualify her from the Kahuna. Bo'alo posla. If the Soris, instead of doing Chalitza, he has intimacy with her, that will disqualify her from the kuna. Why? It's a forbidden form of intimacy. Why is that? Well, he is a brother-in-law. She, to him, is the wife of his brother. A wife of an Ashes Ochiv, if it's not in the context of mitzvah, so that's a totally forbidden relationship. Now, what do we mean by the context of mitzvah? Where the mitzvah of Yibum can be performed, but the Soros is disqualified from the mitzvah of Yibum. Hence, his intimacy with her is purely sinful. And a sinful intimacy results in her being disqualified from the kahuna. V'chein eilinis. Likewise with the eilinis, shecholtzu lo achin. Loi posluha. If she is a widow, having had no children, and one of the brothers does chalitza with her, that does not make her into a chalutza. She is hence not, she's not considered then disqualified from the kahuna. Boalua, if one of the surviving brothers had intimacy with her, paslua, they render her disqualified, unfit to marrying a kohen. Because that is a forbidden form of intimacy. It's a brother-in-law cohabiting with his sister-in-law outside the parameters of the mitzvah. The Gemara, Michti, Shaminon l'Rabbi Akiva de Omar Chayve Lavin kechayve krisis domul. We know that Rabbi Akiva, halachically, with the halachic ramifications of intimacy with a chayve lavin, with someone who is prohibited on the grounds of being a violation of a negative command, is the same, has the same halachic outcome as someone who has intimacy with whom they would be punishable by kores. What's an example of chayve lavin? So let's bring things right home to our sugya. A soris odom. According to Rabbi Akiva, let us back up for a moment. A soris odom is a person that right now is incapable of procreation. And how, therefore, can Rabbi Akiva say that a soris odom, which, by the way, Rashi, it's at this point, we made references earlier, but the soris odom is considered an isur lav, the lav of lo yovel p'tzua daka. He is an example of a p'tzua daka, carrying, therefore, a penalty of a negative violation. It's considered a negative command. Lo yavo means a p'tzua daka shall not marry into the Jewish fold. How then can Rabbi Akiva say that a sris odom does chalitza with his brother's wife? It's a relationship that's strictly forbidden. Just like chiv krisus, for example, the example we've been using since the beginning of the Masechta, if Reuven married Shimon's daughter. Reuven and Shimon are brothers. Reuven marries his niece. Reuven dies, leaving no children. The father, Shimon, is not going to do chalitza, and certainly not yibum with his daughter. Rabbi Akiva views the realm of chivei lavim, like chivei krisis, like any severe form of forbidden relations. And the Gemara goes on to say, v'chayvei krisis lav b'nei chalitza v'yibul ninu, as we just illustrated. Chayvei krisis are not subject to the laws of chalitza and yibul. There's total exemption. How, therefore, can Rabbi Kiva say that a sris odom, who is a negative command, a Jew is not to marry a sris odom, how, therefore, can he say chalitza is done? This is essentially the title of our sugya, and this we wrote on the side, no need to read it again. On the side we also have a mivne, a structural note, where we feature the triangle, because as you go through the sugya, you'll notice triangles appearing. These represent tshuvos lahanal. These are answers to this particular question. How can Rabbi Akiva, when on the one hand we know that a sris odom is an example of a chiyuv lav, an isur lav, a prohibition to the tune of a negative command, lo yavo p'tzua daka, the Torah says, and Rabbi Akiva is very strict with his outlook toward chiyuvei lavin, he views them like chiyuvei kores, how then can Rabbi Akiva say in the Mishnah that a sris odom choyleis v'choysim lishtoi? The Gemara continues with the first triangle. Omar Rabbi Ami, Hocha b'mai askinon. The Mishnah that speaks about the soros doing chalitza, kegoin shenosa ochiv giores. The brother that now dies, he had married, his wife was a Gioris. And now you have a Gioris, a convert. The woman was a convert to Judaism. Her husband died, leaving her as a widow. So the widow is Zekuka Leibum. She's now bound to the surviving brothers. And we're talking now about a brother who is a Soris. Rabbi Kiva Savar Lok Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Kiva accepts Rabbi Yossi's outlook that says, Giomar Kehal Gerim Lo Ikri Kahal. The community of Gerim, of converts, is not classified in halachic terms as a kahal, as a community. In our in previous shurim, we say with these, some of these words, there are certain words that you see in learning that the translation simply diminishes from the impact. The it's really a halachic concept, the word kahal, and in this sense, the pasuk has to be borne in mind, where the pasuk says that these. They're not to enter a kahal. However, the marriage between a saris, Adam, and a giores is not considered a kahal marriage, so that the saris is not in violation of marrying her. She's not part of kahal. And all the pasuk had done, had said, was warned against marrying into kahal. The Gemara asks, "Well, ihachi yavumi nami miyabe." If that be the case, so why in the Mishnah does Rabbi Kiva speak about the srisadim doing chalitza? Why doesn't he mention yibum also? In hachinami, in fact, that is the case. Yibum could have been done. The Aidi, the Omar, Rabbi Yeshua chalitz. Since Rabbi Yeshua used the term chalitz, Omar Ihu Nami Choletz. Rabbi Kiva also used that term. After all, Rabbi Kiva was addressing Rabbi Yoshua. Daiko Nami Dikotoni. And further proof to this, by careful reading of the Mishnah, you can see that Rabbi Kiva approves of Yibum as well. It said in our Mishnah, Heyed Rabbi Yeshua ben Besera, Al ben Megusis. And we saw this in our Mishnah that Rabbi Yeshua ben Besera testified about an individual referred to as ben Megusis, Shehoya b'Yushalayim, Sris Adam v'yibmu es ishto l'kayim divrei Rabbi Kiva. And what we've done with our markings, we emphasize the main points, especially the word v'yibmu. We squiggle underline that, giving that a strong emphasis, that here you have an act of yibum done between a woman and the Sris Adam, substantiating Rabbi Akiva's approach that Yibum is also an option. Shema Mino. So this is conclusive that Rabbi Akiva would have approved Yibum as well. And following Rabbi Ami's explanation, because the Mishnah is talking about a case of a Sris Adam doing Yibum or Chalitza with a Giores. Mosiv Rabba. Rabbah introduces a Tanaic source which is going to present a problem for us. The easiest thing for us to do is essentially go through the source and then highlight the problem. The source says, Psuadaka upus shavcha sris adam v'hazokain. There are different people mentioned in this source, amongst whom you see a Sris Adam is mentioned, and in the source it says Choletz Cholsin O Miyabnin. So here you have a source that reflects an approach that Rabbi Akiva would take, that a Sris Adam is participatory in Chalitza Ketzad. And we have here Ketzad means how can we illustrate this, and we have two approaches, two sides of the same coin. And they're highlighted with our numbers, Roman numerals 1 and 2. Mesu v'lohem noshim. The first illustration involves they're dying. So we're going to focus only on the Sris Adam, not the other cases. A Sris Adam dies, and they have a wife, a widow. V'lohem Achim, and there is a brother. V'omdu Achim, v'osu Maimer b'nishoseim, and the surviving brothers, one of them did Maimer, that's offering money to the Yavama. V'nos Nuget, or gave her a document of divorce. Oshicholzu, or they did Chalitza. Again, we're dealing with the widow of a Soris Adam. Ma she'osu osu, the imbalu kono. If they did, whatever they did takes hold, and if they did bia, if they did actual yibum with her, so it takes hold. Mesu achin v'yomdu hein. Here is the opposite situation, where a healthy brother died, and the Sris Adam gets up. Sris Adam, as we said before, in addition to any of these other cases, but we're focusing only on the Sris Adam. We're not focusing on the Zokeinu Tzuadaku Kushachu, but a Sris Adam gets up, Amduhein, the Osu Maimer Binishosam, Venos Nuget, Oishicholsu. If they did Maimer, they gave money. You're talking the Sris Adam gives money, or he gives her a divorce document, or does Chalitza. Masha Asu Asu. Whatever they do, that would take hold with their different halachic ramifications. We've discussed Maimer and Get very, very extensively earlier in the Masichta. However, what we want to start focusing on is here, V'imbalu Kanu. If they did Bia, so it acquires, it takes hold. The Osir Lekaimon, but it's also to maintain that marriage. Mishum Shinemar Lo Yovoi Ptsua Daka Ukushavcha Bekahal Hashem. So we see Alma, the Gemara says, we see from here Bekahal Askinon. Before, Reb Ami had explained that Rabbi Kiva's acceptance of a Sris Adam doing Chalitza and Yibum is because we're dealing with a non-Kahal situation. If it was a Kahal, and how did we achieve that non-Kahal situation? By saying that we're dealing with a Gyores. Because if it was a Kahal situation, you would have an Isor Lav, the Tzuadaka, or in this case our Sris Adam, an Easter Lav, which is like an Easter Kores, and we know that when you have an Easter Kores, there's no mitzvah of Yibum or Chalitza. Here we have a Sris Adam, Yibum and Chalitza is mentioned, and we are dealing with a Kahal. How can that be? Elo Omar Rabo, Kegoin Shenofla Loi Ulebasoif Niftza. The Mishnah, specifically Rabbi Akiva, is describing a case where a brother, someone died, leaving a surviving brother who, at the time that his brother died, if you want to use names, Reuven and Shimon are brothers. At the time that Reuven died, Shimon was healthy, and at that point, a zika was formed, a connection to Reuven's widow. To Reuven's wife slash widow is formed, a binding is created between Shimon and his sister-in-law. So the Yibum connection exists, and then Ulebesof Nitzan, then he was injured and became a Sris Adam. So that the chalitza is necessary in order to undo the bond, the zika that had been formed. So that would be the circumstance of the Mishnah. Omar le Abaye. The Abaye asks Rabbah, Falesi Isur Ptsua Daka Ptsua, let the isur of ptsua. V'nitchi asei diibom. This is a little ironic because, generally speaking, we speak when we learn Gemara, you learn Halacha, you see asei being doichaloi sase. However, here we're introducing the opposite. Let the isur of ptsua, daka, overrule the need for yibum and chalitza. Milo tnan, do we not have the following precedent for that idea? There's a Tanaic source that speaks about, once again, two brothers, Reuven and Shimon. Reuven dies, leaving a widow. However, before Reuven died, Shimon had married the sister of Reuven's wife. The marriage between Shimon and that sister of Reuven's wife was a rabbinic level marriage. She was a ketana. She was a minor that was married off by her mother or her brother, not by her father. Father died. The death of Reuven sets up a situation where Shimon is confronted by a real Doraisa Yibum opportunity, mitzvah. However, he can't do Yibum with her because the widow is in effect the sister of Shimon's wife. So we mentioned that Shimon's marriage to his wife was on a rabbinic level. Rabbinic marriages can be undone through something called mi'un, where the girl, before she reaches adulthood, she declares, I don't want to stay with this man. And she walks out. If that happens, the marriage between Shimon and his wife is really undone retroactively. And Shimon was never considered married to her. And if that happens, Shimon can do Yibum with his brother's widow. However, we're going to now see Rabbi Gamliel says, under those circumstances where Shimon was married to the wife of Reuven's widow, Rabbi Gamliel Oimer, Imiano Miano, if the Ktana wife of Shimon backs out through Miun, fine. And V'im Lav, and if not, Tamtin, Adshit Tagdil, Shimon will simply wait until his wife becomes an adult. The Teitzei Halazu, the Avoma, will then walk out. Mishum Achosisha will be exempt on the grounds that she, the widow of Reuven, is the sister of Shimon's wife. And Shimon, therefore, doesn't do Yibum with his sister. And that's another example of an Isur Kores. Alma, what do we see? Osi Isur Achos Isha, the negative command behind Achos Isha of marrying one's wife's sister, V'dochi, it pushes off the need, it cancels the need for Yibum and Chalitza. Even though, and here we want to emphasize it very importantly, even though at the time of Reuven's death, a Zika bond was formed. She was fit for Yibum, because at the time of Reuven's death, Shimon's wife was only a rabbinic wife, rabbinically married. And as far as on the Torah level of things, she's non-existent. And therefore, Reuven could have done Yibum and Chalitza. So that even though at the time, at the Shas Nefila, there was a bond, we say that the Isur Achos Isha will kick in and neutralize or cancel the need for Yibum and Chalitza. Hocha Nami. Let's say the same thing here as well, where Reuven's death was at a time when his brother Shimon was still healthy, and then he became a Ptsua Daka, Nesi Isur Ptsua Finitchi. Let the prohibition of Ptsua Daka, or Sris Adam, come and cancel, push away the need for Yibum and Chalitza. So what Rabbah is describing, and what Rabbah is describing is a situation that doesn't require Yibum or Chalitza. So how can he use that as a pshat in our Mishnah? Ella Omar Rav Yosef. We continue with a third approach. Hai Tana, the Tana of our Mishnah regarding the Sris Odom. Hach Tana de Bei Rabbi Akiva Hi. We saw in our Mishnah Rabbi Akiva, but there are different schools of thought within Rabbi Akiva. So our Mishnah represents the following school of thought concerning Rabbi Akiva. And we should add also that we're talking about a case where he was first a Ptsua Daka and then his brother died. The Omar may our Mishnah in its understanding of Rabbi Akiva holds Mechayvei Lavin Desher Havei Mamzer Mechayvei Lavin Grady Lo Havei Mamzer. There are different types of Chayvei Lavin. Rabbi Akiva mentioned that we mentioned in explaining Rabbi Akiva, presenting Rabbi Akiva, that he views those that are prohibited to the tune of a negative command are like a Chiyuv Kores. We know that a Chiyuv Kores illicit relationship will produce an illegitimate child called a Mamzer. Rabbi Akiva says, well, that an illegitimate or a prohibited relationship that's to the tune of a negative command, a lav, also can produce mamzerus, provided it's a negative command of share, of family relations. However, there are negative commands that are not family oriented, not relative oriented. For example, a soris, who's a ptsua daka, has nothing to do with family relations. It's a negative command in the Torah. One who bonds with a soris, well, would not produce a mamzer. Let us look together at Rashi. Elo Omar Rav Yosef. We're looking at Rashi's a few lines above where we are in the Gemara, up in the upper part of the, further up in the narrow lines. Elo Omar Rav Yosef. Shinifza v'achakach noflolo. As we explained, first the surviving brother became a Ptsua Daka, and then Reuven, his brother, died, and she, the widow, falling to him. Udukamris soisler b'kiva chayve lavin k'chayve krisis. And we said, how can Rabbi Akiva speak about the chalitz or yibum under those circumstances? It's like a chayav krisis. Hai tano de masnisin, the tano of our Mishnah that speaks about chalitz or yes being done with the ptsua daka, with the soros adam. Hach tano de bei Rabbi Akiva hidomer b'chayz sevimto. Eizu mamzer, what creates mamzerus? Kol she'er boser shu b'lo yavoy. Any type of relative that is prohibited on the grounds of a negative command, but we emphasize she'er boser, it's a relative. Udulok Rabbi Simoi, and not like Rabbi Simoi's approach to Rabbi Akiva, diomar minakol hoyoyser Rabbi Akiva mamzer chutz me'al monolukoyin gadol. Rabbi Simoi's understanding of Rabbi Akiva was much broader, that all kinds of prohibited relations, even non-she'er relations, will create mamzerus, with the exception of an al monolukoyin gadol. Avol mikol chayvei lavin grady afilu leko kurva havlad mamzer. Amona to kohen gadol is an exception to the rule, and Rashi cited very in a cursory fashion the source for that. However, all other chayvei lavin, according to Rabbi Simoi, would produce mamzerus of the Fi Rabbi Akiva. However, we're not working with Rabbi Simoi, we're working with the other school. Now we continue, we go back to the Gemara. So how did Rav Yosef set up the Mishnah? He set up the Mishnah as speaking about a case where first he was a Ptsua Daka, then the Yibum fell, then she fell to Yibum, and as such you don't have the issue of the issue raised by the opening question of Rabbi Kiva viewing the Chiyuv Lav as a Chiyuv Koris, because we're not dealing with a Lav of She'er. The Gemara asks, Ikri Khan, could you not refer to this situation, the pasuk that says Lahokim Le'ochiv Shem, and what the Gemara is asking is on the way we presented Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef presented the situation of his becoming a, first he was a Ptsua Daka and then she fell to Yibum. Here the Gemara is asking, I want to raise a problem even from the other extreme, even where he at the time of her Nefila Liyibum he was actually healthy, the surviving brother was healthy. Still there should be no mitzvah of Yibum, because the Pasuk says that the mitzvah of Yibum is in order to maintain the name of the deceased by through the procreation of the surviving brother that will maintain the name of the deceased brother. In other words, it's like you're maintaining his spirit. Of course this gets into very esoteric areas, but that's the point of Yibum, where the brother maintains the spirit, the name of his deceased brother. But here, when you're dealing with a Ptsua Daka, you're dealing with Sri Sodom, these are people that are incapable of doing that. Even if he had been healthy at the time that the brother died, when it comes to the actual Yibum, he can't be Mekayim Shem Ochiv. That's what the Gemara means when it says Vaha Lav Bar Hochihu. Now here we're going to look at Rashi Uparchinon. The Rashi says V'amai Soris Choletz. Why should a Soris be participatory in Chalitza? Fafilu Hoysolo Shasa Kosher. Even if he had been capable at the time of his brother's death, he's out of the ballpark. Ikri Kan Lohakim. We should refer to this, the prospect is Lahakim Lahakim Shame. Omar Rava, in Cain. Here it's a little tricky. We have to. What was happening in the Gemara is that we. After Rav Yosef explained that we're dealing with Chayvei Lavin Grady, therefore we are able to understand how Rabbi Kiva could entertain Chalitza, because you're not dealing with a type of Chayvei Lavin that's like Chayvei Krisus. However, but there's still this other problem, a specific problem to a Soris, and that specific problem is inability of Lahokim L'Ochiv Shem. And that problem would affect even a case where he was, where the Soros was healthy at the time of his brother's death. So now, as I said, we're focusing on that specific issue. Rava says, Omar Rava, in Cain, if you are going to say that even where someone was healthy at the time of his brother's death and later became a Soros, if you're going to accept that analysis, Ein l'cha isha shekshera liyavam sheloi nase bailos rizchamo sho achas koilin l'misoso, you'll never have a situation of a woman actually eligible for Yibum, because her husband, a moment before he dies, a moment before a human being dies, before a human male dies, he becomes sterile. So that at the point of death, you have a widow of a Soros. we can look at Rashi. Omar Rava im kein d'shas hakoyshu d'meikor alav milsehi. If you're going to say that the fact that someone originally was capable of procreation, but later became a soros, that that's an insignificant consideration. Hayu ubashas misa lo chazi, since at the time of death the husband is not capable of procreation, that means a second before he dies he loses his ability to procreate, so you'll never have a woman who's a widow of a healthy person. All women are going to be considered the widows of Srisim, and he was a person that couldn't have had children in the first place because of his current Soros status, and therefore she would be excluded from the whole concept of Lachim Lachim Shein. This is only a concept that applies to people who could have had children, but if he dies at a point at which he can't procreate, because everyone before the moment of death loses their procreation abilities, so there's never a widow that would be subject to the mitzvah of Yibum. Let's just read that line again. Ikri kan lahakim lachiv shein v'halav barhochihu. So Rava says back, if that is what is of concern to you, well then im kein ein luchoisha shiksheru liyavam shelo naaseh baylos riz chama shoachas kodim lemisoso. Through Rava's exclamation, we see that that cannot be a consideration. And rather, if a person was capable of procreation and then later became a soros, so that certainly, if you are going to hold, even if you hold like Rabbi Akiva, but you accept the Hesper that we gave, that only from Chayvei Lavin of She'er is Mamzerus created, but other kinds of Chayvei Lavin do not create Mamzerus, so then that all cases of Yibum can be understood. The Gemara raises a question. Le Rebbe Eliezer Piruka Derava Pircha he. In order to appreciate this rather vague line, we look at Rashi. Le Rebbe Lezer, we're looking at Rashi on the first line under the Gemara text. Le Rebbe Lezer, Piruka Derava, Pircha he. Gemara Porach. The Gemara is asking, Klomar, Hai Piruka Derava. Rava's response to the question that had been raised by the Gemara. Pircha he le Rebbe Eliezer. Now, do you remember Rebbe Eliezer? Well, we had him in a diamond up there in the Mishnah. Rava's point would present a problem for Rebbe Eliezer. D'havade chazinon d'shas hakosher milsohi. We see from Rava that when we analyze cases of Yibum, we have to take into consideration the fact that a person originally was capable of procreation. That's called shas hakosher. They were capable of it. And that is enough to qualify someone for Yibum and Chalitza. In other words, the way they are at the point of death, that's of no concern to us. If that's the case, why then did Rebbe Lezer say that a Soros Adam doesn't do Chalitza? As far as Rebbe Lezer is concerned, the fact that he once was healthy doesn't seem to make a difference. Ha vaday srisus shel misa ein lo refua. The srisus that misa creates, that impending death creates, is something that certainly doesn't have a solution, doesn't have a remedy. Afilu hachi misyabem esoisha. And nevertheless, all women that become widows, leaving no children, do yibum mishum shasa kosher mekor, because their husbands before the moment of death, before that, they were capable. So that if we look at this in a global fashion, the only thing that really matters is that a person was once capable of procreation, even though they find themselves in a situation now that has no remedy. And this is what Rabbi Lezer in the Mishnah spoke about: the Sri Sodom is not choice because he has no refuah. Well, but every man before his time of death becomes a soros, and that's a situation of no refuah. And yet we do yibum all widows that are left as widows without their husbands leaving children. All of them do yibum. So what is the Tana Rebbe Lezer going to answer to this point? The Gemara answers, Hossam, in the case of that which we described as Srisus, at the moment before death, isn't really Srisus. It's not the formal case of someone who loses his capacity of reproduction because of some kind of injury or health deficiency, but rather kechishusa da'aschila bay. It's because of an extreme form of weakness that one experiences a moment before death. So it's weakness and not srisus that is described. Hechi domi sris chamo. We said that a sris chamo is someone that had never had a shasa kosher. He was never capable. Omar Rav Yitzchok bar Yosef, Omar Rav Yochanan, kol shelo. We continue at the top of Daf Pei Omer Aleph. Kol shelo ro sho achas bekashruso. A sris chamo is someone that was born that way. It was Rashi says shaloka mimei imoy mino yadinon. How can you identify that? Omar Abaye kol hamatil mayim veina oisekipa. Anyone who, when he is matil mayim, that's a expression meaning he relieves himself of liquid waste, he urinates, and the flow does not form, it doesn't arc over. Kippah is an arc shape. Mimai havoi, how does this come to be? How is it that a woman produces a child like that? What happened? De afyo ime betiara. It is because the child's mother had baked bread at noontime. Tiara is noontime. Noontime is the height of the heat of the day, and at that time she's also heating up the oven. So you've got the heat of the day and the heat of the oven. Vishasya shichra marka, and she drinks a certain type of beer. Now there are two explanations in Rashi, two seemingly opposite explanations. Either it's a diluted beer or it's a very strong kind of beer. So that baking a bread at noontime and then drinking this kind of beer will lead to a child that's a soros. Omar of Yosef, Hainu de Shamano Limid Yomar, I now understood that which my mother had said, Kol She Mimei Imoy Lokui, Feloyodano Mai Nihu. She had made reference to children that were afflicted from the time of birth. And I didn't know what she was referring to. But now I understand that she's referring to a Sris Chamo, as we explained. Question. V'lechu Shemo Hivri Beintayim. Should we not take into consideration that maybe in the interim he actually became healthy? And if that be the case, he would then be someone that had a Shas HaKosher. And if he had a Shas HaKosher, so we saw in the Mishnah that having had a Shas HaKosher is a factor. We saw this certainly in Rabbi Akiva, for example. In our Mishnah, said a Sris Chama doesn't do chalitza, doesn't do yibum, because he had no shas hakosher. But if in the interim he had a shas hakosher, so he would be subject to yibum and chalitza. So why not take that into consideration? The Gemara answers: Kevon the tchilos of a sofer lokui, since at his beginning and as he is now, he is deficient. Lo chayshina, we don't take into consideration something having happened, some change having happened in the middle. Mosiv Rav Mori. Rav Mori raises an objection to this kind of analysis from another source, dealing with a different topic, but the idea of coming to conclusions based on the situation at the beginning and the situation at the end, thereby precluding changes in the interim, we see that's not the way we look at things in other topics. So we have a short quote, two-line quote, from the realm of blemishes on firstborn animals. Firstborn animal, a bechor, is a firstborn male animal, is of course of a kosher variety, is given to a kohen and it's brought in the Beis HaMikdash as a sacrifice. However, a blemished firstborn is not brought as a sacrifice. There are different kinds of blemishes, and here there's going to be a reference to a type of eye blemish. And the source says, Rabbi Chanina ben Antignus Omer, Boitkin Oisei Shalosh Pomen Besof Shmonim Yom. And we look at Rashi. It's referring to in the Maseches Bechoros, Chavar Vor V'Hamayim Hakvuim Areze Mum. These are different eye ailments, eye situations. They are considered a blemish. V'Ezui Chavar Vor Hakvua. What is Chavar Vor Hakvua? In order for a blemish to be considered a blemish disqualifying a Bechor as a sacrifice, it has to be a permanent, a fixed, permanent type of blemish. What is that? Kol shisha shmoinim yoim. If it has been present in the animal for 80 days. Rabbi Chanina ben Antignus Omer, boitin oisei shalosh pomen besof shmoinim yoim. We have to check him out. Over those 80 days, he'd have to be checked out at the beginning. That's barosh pei, uve emtsa pei, in the middle. And here we squiggle on that in the Rashi. This is the key point. A checking has to take place in the middle, uve sof pei, and at the end of 80. Avo bivdika tchila v'sof lo saki. The fact that we may have checked him at the beginning of the 80-day period of time and the end of the 80 days, that wouldn't be sufficient for establishing it to be a blemish. Shema ben tayem ovar. Maybe in the interim it actually healed. This chavarver went away. V'nimtza shein kavua, and then it would be a non-permanent type blemish. V'lo amrinun, and we don't say hayol v'tchilas v'sof lo ki vaday lo ovar. That since it was there at the beginning and the end, it definitely had not passed on or hadn't vanished. So we see that simply coming to a conclusion based on the way something is at the beginning and then using that by the source, he was born that way and now he is that way, that means he is a source without a shasa kosher. Well, you see from over here, we don't say things, we don't judge things that way. The Gemara responds, L'chad Eiver Chayshina. When it comes to one limb, the eye in this particular case. So Chayshina, we do suspect or raise the possibility of healing in the interim. The Kule Gufa Lo Chayshina. However, something that is a total body affliction, as is the case of a Soros, there we don't say that he became totally healthy. He became a non-saurus in the interim. Rather, as we said, if he's born that way and the way he is now, he appears as a saurus. So then he is a saurus without worrying about a shas hakosher. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.